to be speaking about is it's just one of a myriad of things that's come out of these similar places on the Tongass. And we have the bones of ichthyosaurs that range in size from like a small dolphin to bigger than the killer whales we have today. And we've got quite a bit of material from those individuals. We have other sharks and fish and things like that. And we have all of the invertebrates, all of the corals. We have sponges. We have all the clam shells, snails, and everything else. So collectively, it gives you a picture of what the seas were like that these were swimming in, which also gives an idea of where this was at in the globe before it made its way through the plate tectonic conveyor belt and became part of Southeast Alaska.
This area was under a, was it a tropical sea at the time?
Yeah, it was about 20 degrees north of the equator.
The thalassosaur and the ichthyosaur, I guess, are not dinosaurs. They're just considered reptiles?
Yeah, they're marine reptiles. So we don't have the big apatosaurus or the T-Rex or stegosaurus or any of those classic Jurassic dinosaurs and Cretaceous dinosaurs that people know and love. What we have, though, are these really, really cool marine reptiles.
And they were contemporaries of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, a little bit before, but contemporary through. The ichthyosaurs existed right up to the period where the dinosaurs became extinct.
Now, the thalassosaur is a bit of a smaller reptile. Well, not tiny, but 3 to 8 feet long?
Yeah, pretty much the thalassosaur equivalent today would be the iguana. So it had the ability to come and go out of the edges of the seas, but primarily fed in the sea.
Why are these finds, like a find like this, so rare?
Just the probability of anything being fossilized and preserved in any kind of environment intact, virtually with the bones in the order that they were during life. The other thing that's really exciting about this one is the possibility that we actually have some soft tissue preserved, and that's why we're really going forward slowly with the preparation of this. There is some material off to the edge that we can't justify any other way than it might be even a remnant piece of skin. So this is, I mean, the probability of anything being fossilized is incredibly low percentage, and the probability of it even being fossilized with any kind of order to the bones whatsoever is even lower percentage, let alone have it move across a third of the globe and be joined up with Southeast Alaska and all of the physical strain and stress that it's been put under and multiple glaciations and everything else, and we were lucky enough to be find it on the beach.
And there might even be some actual skin or flesh in there.
Yeah, that's a kind of, I mean, that, and as far as we know, there's none of that's been preserved in any fossil anywhere.
So you
of this thalassosaur.
So could you get DNA out of something like that?
Not probably DNA. It is definitely mineralized. But you might be able to get texture. And sometimes the way that the chemistry of the mineral that replaced it won't reflect. If it was red, blue, or green, but it might reflect whether it was light or dark.
Along with the fossils, Bechtel will also discuss how scientists have been able to broaden their search for early human habitation in the region by figuring out how the shorelines have changed over thousands of years.
We've been putting a lot of effort into understanding the changing shorelines through time. As the ice came and went across the Tongass, there was land and ice interactions. The weight of the ice pushed down on the land, and it pushed up on other places. At the same time, sea level was moving up and down. And by figuring out the relative sea level, we could go back in time and figure out where the old shorelines were. We have developed a model to predict those shorelines and are using it to find early habitation sites where nobody's ever looked before. So we now have, when we started this a few years ago, there was just a small handful of sites across the Tongass, such as Shukaka or what you would know as On Your Knees Cave, that have really old human habitation. And we have more than doubled that in a year and a half by predicting where to go find that. And so I was going to introduce the whole concept of what we're doing and invite people to become part of that process. I'm working with Jane Smith there in Petersburg to come up with a similar model that we can apply in Petersburg, and we're working to refine this. That's what we're up there doing this week. So I'm going to touch on that changing shorelines. You know, what was the land-ice-sea interactions, and where was that shoreline through time, and how we can possibly predict where that was at to help us do a better job in defining where some of the earliest cultural sites are.